So, although we're a little bit ahead of time, we move on to the last presentation in this session, the National Science Foundation activities from Gil Devey.
The same old slide may be tiring, but there it is again. Good to be with you all and to revisit with some, as has already been mentioned, older friends, Professor Wolf, although I top him, I am glad to say, and I hope I continue to do that. This public awareness of science was just mentioned by Emily, and about 2 weeks ago, as a member of our Interagency Committee on Disability Research in Washington, there was a committee meeting, and toward the end of the meeting, the executive secretary asked for the various federal agencies assembled around the table if they would be willing to have a web page of their own that they could show the research that has been completed and make it known to the consumer. When my turn came to speak, I said, NSF will go along with this so long as you prohibit the use of the term medical breakthrough. You don't understand? People read about medical breakthroughs in the Ladies' Home Journal. They see it on the evening news called Medical Breakthrough, and the next day they're calling us saying, we want your medical breakthrough. And of course, it's only the result of a published research paper. I'm sure you have the same problems here. Let me first thank all of you for coming, giving of your valuable time to this endeavor. I especially want to thank Peter Wells for his great work in arranging the venue and other actions that occurred during the course of developing this, and of course especially to Sumi Halal and Andrew Sixsmith for their putting together this program, but mainly to all of you who will present very valuable information in the next day and a half. I'd like to give a little idea of where the National Science Foundation fits into this picture. By first giving some rather stereotyped, straightforward things, NSF has a vision to enable the nation's future through discovery, learning, and innovation. And that realizing the promise of the 21st century depends in large measure on today's investments in science, engineering, and in mathematics. Now, NSF has reduced this in the strategic goals for the foundation in the support of people, ideas, and tools. And the mission of NSF is, as highlighted there, to promote the progress of science. Then the rest of that mission is standard with all federal agencies that spend government money, to advance the national health, prosperity, and welfare, to secure the national defense, and for other purposes. But the highlighted one, to promote the progress of science, is really the NSF mission. Now, having said all of that, I'd mentioned nothing about healthcare, medical science, transportation, aviation, computing. The mission is to promote the progress of science. So what are we doing supporting a project like this, which is about as close to delivering healthcare as many agencies will ever find themselves? Let me try and explain that by some examples. Some examples are sitting here in this room, by the way, which we'll mention the people business to develop a diverse, internationally competitive, and globally engaged workforce. Those people could be working in healthcare, medical activities, jet airplanes, whatever. Ideas, curiosity-driven research is still welcome at NSF. Tools, accessible state-of-the-art information bases and shared tools. One example we have, which we're sharing the results of with the Food and Drug Administration, represented here today by Bill Herman, is the intellectual results of a project on testing heart valves, which turns out to be a big scientific problem, which I was unaware of, and it may still be a problem after the NSF research project is completed, but we will have learned a lot. Advancement of knowledge. Let me show you now a bit how the curiosity-driven aspect of NSF results in medical projects. For example, the best example, actually, the information technology research activity now supported by NSF, $145 million this year, has several awards, grants, in the fields. At least three of them are in smart homes. We'll talk about that a little later. There's $145 million in that place, but you must compete with everyone else in science and engineering. Fortunately, about 30% of such calls, as you indicate here, result in medically oriented projects supported by NSF. Same way with nanoscience and engineering, sensors and sensor systems, which this meeting, of course, will address in great measure. Small business innovation research. And then in the United States, something like 80% of the medical device manufacturers are small businesses. Programs for persons with disabilities. This is in our education directorate, mainly to provide funding for persons with disabilities to learn how to be better at science, engineering, and mathematics, and to encourage them to get into the business of science, engineering, and mathematics. Human-computer interaction, universal access, is the name of a program in our computer directorate. Doesn't say anything necessarily there about disabled or elderly, but I think you see the general application. And in the engineering directorate, undergraduate design projects, and the output there must be directed to a person with a disability. In the United States, all engineering programs that are accredited must have a design course, which all engineers, engineering students, must pass successfully in order to graduate. And we kind of tempt them to go into biomedical engineering by having this undergraduate design projects award, which requires the engineering student to find a person with a disability and make something, a device or a software program, that will assist that specific person. I said that several of the projects in information technology research are represented here. We will hear later this morning about the Aware Home, sustaining the quality of life for an aging population. And the goal of that award, in NSF's abstract of the award, is to advance research in three areas: human-computer interaction, computational perception, and software engineering. Nothing in the description about delivering a smart home health service to an aging person or a disabled person. Then at the University of Texas Arlington, represented here by Dr. Das, the MAV home, an intelligent environment home. And notice the highlighted area is an intelligent agent able to perceive its environment through the use of actuators and act upon that environment using actuators. Those are words that describe a number of the smart home developments. Along with the Aware Home at the Georgia Institute of Technology is a district, again, information technology research, a distributed programming infrastructure for integrating smart sensors. Georgia Tech has a sensor laboratory, and they work very closely with the Aware Home, and their abstract actually uses the word medical devices, but notice it's along with flight control, railway signaling, and vehicle management systems. Now, it should happen. This is my high-tech slide. I hope you like it. NSF supports nanotechnology, biotechnology, info technology, and cognitive technology. And there is now a move to integrate all four of those. Call it nano-bio-info-cogno, to do the following, according to the proceedings of a workshop that was held in June a year ago. Through self-delivered nano-medical interventions, patients in the future will be able, in the comfort of their homes, to perform non-invasive treatments autonomously or under remote supervision by physicians. Nowhere in the report of the meeting is there any hint as to how this is going to happen, but it certainly does indicate it's the ultimate smart home, I would say. Well, this, the above, as it were, is a very short description of activities of NSF in this area. Let me now indicate something, an activity which I think you will all be interested in, some more than others perhaps, but the Interagency Committee on Disability Research was organized maybe 20 years ago to promote coordination and cooperation among federal departments and agencies conducting rehabilitation research programs. Now, that word, like the major agency in NSF that supports rehabilitation research, the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. The laws governing these matters were formed before anybody ever thought of a smart home, of technologies for successful aging, or the demographic change where independent living was suddenly becoming very important. So the social part of this, that is the laws, and the technologies are far apart now. The Interagency Committee is actually now trying to coordinate and cooperate. Both of those are mild words. There's still no direction of other agencies' budgets in this matter. But an annual report, the first annual report to the President and the Congress by this Interagency Committee is by mule pack train on its way from the committee to the president. I had hoped it would have been cleared for distribution by the time of this meeting, but unless somebody who has access to the internet can show it to me, all I can say is that it is imminent. And I think you will enjoy and benefit from reading it. It will be a complete compilation of all assistive technology, smart home, rehabilitation kind of research supported by the United States government as of 1 year ago. The committee is holding a workshop on cell phone interference with hearing aids in September, and it is also developing a one-click website for all U.S.-funded disability research projects. Now, one click, that's good PR talk, but it really is being developed so that on the web page shown here, which is very simple, www.icdr.us, Interagency Committee on Disability Research, the annual report to the president, the workshop proceedings, this one-click business will all be on that web page. The one page will initially have, the one-click page will have the active research projects of the Department of Health and Human Services, which includes the NIH, the National Science Foundation, the Department of Education, NIDER, the Department of Defense, and I believe NASA to begin with. But then it will be extended to all federal agencies. It's a fairly massive undertaking. Also about to be released is a report called U.S. Assistive Technology Industry. I have a couple of printed copies which I will give to selected people in the audience here. But I encourage you, if this is the kind of information that will benefit you, keep watching that web page for the Interagency Committee on Disability Research, because it will be as current a source of information of everything in this field that the United States is funding. Thank you very much, and look forward to a great meeting with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Devi. Any questions for Gil? Well, we're a quarter an hour. Oh, there is a couple. They're good, excellent. Let me pass the microphone to you. You can say who you are. I know who you are, but they don't.
Tony Horn, Department of Health again. Gil, I think you've hit upon a very key point. It's a very multidisciplinary, this area of research. I mean, we have some research projects where you've got occupational therapists, rehabilitation engineers, software engineers, physiotherapists, the social scientists, and the list goes on. And they're all very critical, all delivering different components of a work package in research. And that's a very valid point to bear in mind in a lot of these projects. One site may not have all the skills to necessarily deliver on the different components that you've raised.
In no way am I going to speak for the Aware Home people, but I did, about a year ago, look at their annual report that was sent to NSF, and I made a compilation of the kinds of disciplines involved in that project and the focus user groups that they use, the industries involved as well in supporting them, or working with them at least. And there may be one or two of the disciplines you mentioned that they're not using, but in specific important cases, it's there. But National Science Foundation essentially wants curiosity-driven research. Even though it might say information technology, you've got to have your own ideas. Nobody's giving a hint from NSF as to what you propose, but it has to fit into information technology.
Yeah, Irfan Issa from Georgia Tech. I just wanted to add to that. I mean, exactly the kind of stuff we're talking about.
we're crossing so many domains, and I'll be happy to talk more about it with you, because that's the Aware Home project that Gil is talking about. And Gil doesn't know it, actually, we have two other ITRs also related to the Aware Home.
Incidentally, the ITR, Information Technology Research Program, which is now under evaluation, that is, the proposals are under evaluation, and there are only 1,500 of them. And I'm glad I'm not involved in that.
Good morning. I was going to ask a question following up on a point that Sumi's slide had presented earlier about public policy considerations. And I noticed that neither you nor your counterpart in Europe had mentioned that. The reason I'm interested is because I spent 16 years in Washington working with the federal government in public policy. And one of the things that we found out is that there's all these wonderful grant programs and all this research and development, but it never gets any further than the shelf because it doesn't make it to the policymakers who are actually going to determine whether or not it makes it into the workplace or into legislation. So I was curious whether either one of you funded any of those areas. And another reason I bring it up is because we received a grant from the Department of Education, and one of the strengths that was recorded by the reviewers was the fact that we had a public policy arm that was actually going to try and get R&D off the shelf and pass through the legislative channels.
I can pass the buck on that one, because at NSF there's a directorate for behavioral, economic, and social sciences. And I know they support public policy research. I'm unaware of anything specific at this point in the medical area, but they do certainly support such research. They don't go out looking for projects. People come to them.
Do you want to say something about the EPSRC and public health, perhaps?
Although I didn't bring it out specifically, all the research that we support, we hope will inform policy. But we wouldn't fund anything that is looking at existing policies and finding faults with them. We want to do research that's looking to inform future policies.
And the Interagency Committee on Disability Research tomorrow, actually, is holding what they call a stakeholders conference. The stakeholders happen to be representatives of advocate groups like the Disabled American Veterans, and there are about 27 different organizations attending that meeting.
Yes, we have some policies with regards to targets which we like to see our hospitals achieve in terms of cancer rates and heart disease and stroke treatments, and perhaps some of these type of practical aspects that feed through in policy. But one of the key policies, of course, comes out of our Treasury Department as to who funds the cost of all of that. And that's something that wouldn't involve necessarily the Department of Health. We also have this issue of who is paying for the social care. We used to have a Department of Health and Social Security, and we were one department. We've split off. And we are improving our connections in care between healthcare and also what's happening in our social care to a certain degree through cross-departmental discussions. But it is a long haul, and it hasn't helped dividing up the departments as we've done so.
Just in the back row, there's a comment from the European Union, I guess. Then we'll come back to you.
Hello, no, not the European Union. Peter Lansley, I'll be talking after lunch about the Equal Research Network, but this interconnectedness is so important. Social care, healthcare, housing providers, very, very big issue about budget holders and those that invest in smart homes, for example, and new technology aren't the ones who gain the benefit. And this is a really important issue politically, financially, but it's also an important issue for researchers, and we cannot get very far with the sorts of research we'll be talking about over the next couple of days, unless the projects which we involve with keep a weather eye open for those particular issues of implementation. We have to take a responsibility for policy issues, even if we're down in the nuts and bolts of the technology. because that's the very first thing that stops the development and the implementation of the technology. And it's going very slowly, as Tony suggested.
Okay, I was planning to say a little bit later on in my presentation also about the relation between research and public policies. Just now, right now, I'll just mention the fact that all proposers are required to explain in their proposals, in their submissions, how their project is going to support European policies. And some of those policies are, of course, integration, participation, and so on, elderly and disabled. In particular, there have been in the last few years and now going on specific policy initiatives and actions in the field of information technologies and in the information society. They are called e-Europe, and they have specific parts also relating to participation for all, participation for people with disabilities and elderly, and so on. And the research is supposed to also support those specific policy initiatives.
But you've just reminded me that at NSF, about 1 year ago, there are two review criteria for all proposals now. The first one is intellectual merit. The second one, which must be specifically addressed by the proposer, is broader impacts. And that covers the social end of it very well. Just simply says broader impacts. Doesn't have to be social end. It could be, I just discovered zero. Look what that does for mathematics. That's quite a broader impact. I forgot along the way, I apologize to Dr. Mike Vanier, as one of our rapporteur, and if he asks you questions to clarify something, please help him, because he's vital to our output. Thank you, Mike.
The microphone at the moment. I'm going to be at my professional enfant terrible, which is a mission I have in life. A few months ago, I ran a seminar in Edinburgh, as part of the Edinburgh Science Festival, called The Death of Competence. Which were in fact questioned that by and large politicians and expert advice was more likely to be wrong than right. I think that experience over the last few years will add a certain degree of credence to this. I therefore completely agree with you, if this is indeed what you intended to say, that we who design devices or systems should not say, well, it's no good unless it fits into the system as it stands at the moment. There may well be good reasons why the new technology actually has to change the system. And I should say something about this this afternoon. I, for instance, do not believe that anything which is being proposed at the moment can actually be paid for by any of the countries in which the introduction is planned to take place, unless there is also a change in society which takes part at the same time. So I think we are now operating in a form of technology where the fiscal impact is so enormous that you can't just separate that and say, well, somehow or other this will be looked for, because we know that in Britain, for instance, the health service can't pay for these things and will never be able to pay for these things unless there is a change in which these kinds of things are organized. So I'm totally behind you that we must, as well as designing new gadgets, also design new policies and try and promote those concurrently.
Here. Ah, yes. Just in response to that comment, there is research that's showing that these kinds of technologies can actually reduce health-related costs, and 2 days in the hospital versus a smart home, or 5 days in a hospital versus a smart home, is a good deal.
Service costs are escalating faster than GDP, whilst this may be true for a particular section of, because it then affects more people want it, and the overall standard goes up. I do not know of a single occasion in any country where a major technological invention has reduced overall health service costs. They've all escalated at a rate which is higher than GDP, and this will, I think, is is inevitable.
That's perhaps a sobering note on which to end, unless anyone else wants to say something. Who wants to say something?